welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I am Bill Barnwell. Hope you guys enjoyed our show earlier this week with Danny Kelly, our new second episode of the week. I guess our first episode of two now each week, breaking down the Monday Night Football game, which of course we had plenty to discuss with Jaguars and Bengals, and then breaking down some of the Monday news. This show going to be, as usual, on Thursday mornings, breaking down sort of the bigger picture stuff, thinking about the league as a whole. And today I am joined to do that, talking about one of my favorite topics every year with one of my favorite guests. We are talking about the people who have the most to gain or lose over the remainder of the 2023 season. And joining me to talk about that is my old pal, Robert Mays of The Athletic. Mays, I feel like we've done this show probably 10 times in different places over the years.
I think it's probably more than 10 times because we do it before the season, and now we're doing it in the middle of the season. So it's probably up to 15 or 20 times at this point.
Yes, but things have changed. Like some of the players, people on this list, dramatically different circumstances than they had before the season. So excited to do this with you as always. And I feel like when I have this list, like we didn't have a number in our head, or at least in my head before I started, but I always feel like I have to get two or three extra because there's going to be some crossover. So I have, I believe, 8. I think you said you had 10. We're not going to get to that many, but let's see how many we get to, and let's see too how many of them we have together, because there seems like there's maybe a few obvious ones, and then after that, maybe some that are a little more obscure. But of course, you are the guest today, Mays. Let me let you go first. A player or coach or someone around the NFL with the most to gain or lose over the remainder of the 2023 season.
Why don't we do a player and a coach in the same place, and a place that I'm very familiar with? This is the first place my brain went because obviously I have Justin Fields and Matt Eberflus.
Yeah. On my list as well. Fields seems like you have to go with that one. How are you feeling about Justin Fields and Matt Eberflus after a victory the last time we saw the Bears?
I think we've probably seen the last full season of Justin Fields in Chicago. Mm-hmm. If the Bears are going to get the number one pick, it really does feel like they're going to draft a quarterback. So a couple weeks ago, if we had this discussion, I think there would have been more focus on what Justin Fields could do to play himself into keeping that job. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably gone. I think we're probably going to see a different player there under center for the Bears next year. To me, the bigger question for Justin Fields is, where is he going to play next year? Mm-hmm. Is he going to play well enough down the stretch to potentially make himself an attractive candidate for a team that's seeking out a quarterback? So he's playing, in my opinion, for his future and for his standing on the next roster that he joins. For Matt Eberflus, I think he's coaching for his job over the next couple months.
I mean, absolutely. I think you'd separate these two guys here. With Fields, I guess let me frame it this way. Do you think there's anything he could do over the next 5 weeks or the next five games to finish this season that even if the Bears do get a top two pick from Carolina, they would say, we're good, we're sticking with Justin, we're going to either draft Marvin Harrison or trade this pick for a ton of draft capital? Is there anything that he can do, or do you think that ship has 100% sailed?
I think it's going to be really difficult. If they were picking in the middle of the top 10, let's say they had the 6th pick in this draft and they had 2 picks in the top 10, then maybe it's more of a conversation because you have to do some maneuvering to turn the page. Mm-hmm. I said this before the season started. There is a chance that if they end up with one of these top picks, the decision is made for them. Yeah. And that's still how I feel, because even if he has a great last 5 games, you still have to look at the entire body of work and you have to consider how this puts you on the right financial clock. Mm-hmm. Being able to start over and having it handed to you with a prospect of the caliber that Caleb Williams and Drake May are, it almost feels like a no-brainer. So to no fault of Justin Fields, I don't think he can really do anything over the next month or so that's going to shake the Bears' willingness to use one of those top 2 picks on a quarterback. So
they finish Lions, Browns, Cardinals, Falcons, and Packers in Week 18. If they get hot, let's say they win, they already won, they beat the Vikings last week, or 2 weeks ago in, just a fever dream of a football game in so many ways. Even if he wins 5 straight and plays, even if he's not if he plays like Jordan Love, let's say, to pick a quarterback who's looked quite good over the past few weeks. If he plays like Jordan Love over the next 5 games, you don't think they even have a second thought about Fields? Or do you think You really think it's just like that is finished at this point?
I would be really surprised. I also think that if he plays that way, he potentially pumps up his trade value and no makes question. It more appealing to trade him. So I think that it almost cuts both ways. I would be very surprised if Justin Fields was the quarterback of the Bears next year. That's not based on anybody I've talked to about this. I just think just reading the tea leaves and looking at the situation and how it's unfolded, I would be very surprised. But I do think he is playing for a starting job in 2024 over the next 5 years.
Right. And certainly the nature of that starting job, how desirable he is, what the trade return would look like, whether a team picks up his fifth-year option, which is a legitimate question at this point. And one of the reasons why it makes sense from the Bears' perspective to go out and draft a quarterback, selfishly is the wrong way to put it, but just being realistic, is that it sort of resets the clock for the people in charge, especially for Ryan Poles, who did not draft Justin Fields, who inherited Justin Fields. But I don't know that it resets the clock for Matt Eberflus. Maybe it would for a typical coach, but there have been so many weird things that have popped up with Eberflus this year. You have multiple coaches on his staff being fired or leaving the organization for behavioral concerns. Eberflus's game management has left a lot to be desired. The defense, I mean, it's better. Certainly it's been better the past, 2 months than it was earlier in the season. It's certainly not a finished product. I mean, this was a guy who was brought in not because he was a great offensive mind, but because he was supposed to be someone who could build a strong culture. We don't really know that that's there yet. Maybe it'll form over the next 5 weeks. But from your perspective, Mays, what would it take for Matt Eberflus to keep his job heading into 2024?
Them not drafting a quarterback this offseason.
So you think if it's a quarterback, they hire an offensive mind and Eberflus is done?
Yeah, that I don't know if that's their thinking on it, but that's my thinking on it. Mm-hmm. Because I've seen this too many times in Chicago, specifically over the last 5 years. In 2017, John Fox is the head coach. Ryan Pace is the general manager. They draft Mitchell Trubisky without telling the coaching staff that they were doing that, and then fire the coaching staff after that first season. So now you have two different staffs in a young quarterback's first two seasons. Go back a couple years. The year they draft Justin Fields, Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace are clearly lame duck coaches playing, coaching, fighting for their jobs. Mm-hmm. They get fired at the end of the season after Justin Fields' first year. Now he's settled with a different coaching staff in his second year. That misalignment has not worked, and it's a terrible way to approach the two most important decisions you can make as an NFL organization, the head coach and the quarterback. You need those guys, or at least want those guys, when it's available to you, to put them on the same page, to put them on the same timeline. And that's why with the Eberflus stuff, I don't think he's done a horrendous job. Mm-hmm. I think there's clear signs of growth, especially on defense. They're getting better, and that's what you want to see out of a second-year coach. If this was a circumstance where, Fields will be back and you can talk yourself into the trajectory, that's totally fine. But it makes so much sense for you just to move on and have a clean break when you know you're starting over at quarterback. So I just think even if there are signs of life in what they've done over the last month or so, especially on defense and just overall, it makes the most sense to move on and just start over clean with whatever the next version of the roster looks like.
Okay. So, impossible question to answer. Still going to ask you anyway because it's you. Where is Justin Fields playing in 2024 if the Bears do get one of those top two picks and draft a quarterback? Obviously, like we said, it depends on how he plays over the next 2 weeks and what that trade value looks like. But where do you think Justin Fields is playing in 2024? And you may have some bias here as a longtime Bears fan. Being realistic, who is the head coach for Drake May or Caleb Williams in Chicago in 2024?
Well, the answer to the second question is the same answer that everyone is going to give over the next 2 months, and it's Ben Johnson, right?
Mm-hmm. Do you think Ben Johnson would leave the Lions to go coach a division rival, though? And if you're Ben Johnson, is this the job you want? Is this the most desirable opportunity you're going to get if it's one of these two young quarterbacks? Would you rather say, we're going to talk about someone else in this list, maybe go to the Chargers and coach Justin Herbert?
So that's going to be probably the most appealing job that comes open because of the quarterback situation. Mm-hmm. And if he has his pick of those gigs, it's probably not the Bears, but he's still the number one priority. If I could pick one guy, he would still be it, just because I think you have to maximize that position. I think you have to maximize your offense.
Sure.
We've seen this over the last 5, 6, 7 years. I know that there are examples of defensive coaches working out. Look at what's happening with D'Amico Ryans right now in Houston.
No question.
But look at what's happening with so many other situations around the league. When you have that head coach that is the centerpiece of all of this, what it allows you to be offensively, what it allows you to sustain in terms of the staff you can lose, quarterbacks moving in and out. Look at what Kyle Shanahan is doing. Look at what Sean McVay is doing. Look at what Matt LaFleur is doing. Look at what Mike McDaniel is doing. I want that. I don't think it's unreasonable at this current version of the NFL to be chasing that sort of model. And in my opinion, based on what he has done in Detroit over the last couple of years, Ben Johnson is the most desirable version of that model. Mm-hmm. Whether he thinks the Bears are a desirable landing place is an entirely different conversation.
You brought up D'Amico Ryans, who of course is doing great work in Houston this first year. Bobby Slowick is not going to be there very long. Bobby Slowick's going to be a head coach.
Not.
Maybe as early as this offseason. And I'm not saying... God, this, I have to be very careful with how I frame this, Mace, as you know. I'm not saying C.J. Stroud is a Bobby Slowick creation. I am not saying that he is a system quarterback. He is not. He is a special talent. But he is also getting help by having a very good offensive coach. No accident that I believe top three in first down percentage as a passer in the NFL this year. I believe it's Brock Purdy, Tua Tagovailoa, and C.J. Stroud. And there's no guarantee that the next guy D'Amico Ryans hires as his OC is going to be as good as the guy he has right now. It's not to criticize Ryans, not to criticize Stroud, but just the reality of there's only so many people who are good at this stuff, and it's hard to keep them unless they have a job that you cannot get promoted from. And
there's no doubt
that's the tough part here. So on one hand, yes, defensive coaches are probably undervalued because, like, the, you know, D'Amico Ryans, one of the five best defensive coaches in football, is going to be better than the 25th best offensive coach who gets hired. But you have to have a good offensive coordinator to make this work. And that's going to be the tough part is for Ryans is keeping that guy.
The arguments that we often hear for defensive minded head coaches, how often are they rooted in the success that Bill Belichick and Mike Tomlin have had?
Sure.
And look at what they've had to endure on offense over the last few years and how much it's held them back. You have to get that side of the ball right. And I just think the quickest path and the easiest path and the most sustainable path to getting that side of the ball right is hiring that figurehead at the center of the organization.
Mm-hmm. Now, Justin Fields.
I really don't know.
You have to pick.
I really don't know because there are so many teams that might seem like a marriage that makes sense, like Atlanta, okay? If Atlanta realizes they've run out of road with Desmond Ridder, I don't think Atlanta would want Justin Fields. Based on conversations that I've had with people over the last year about their quarterback situation, I would be surprised if that team specifically were to take a run at a Justin Fields. What about Minnesota? We'll see what happens with Kirk Cousins. Does Kirk Cousins come back? If he does or doesn't, is Justin Fields kind of a low-risk move they can potentially make to solve their long-term quarterback situation? Is that a move the Bears would make in the division? I don't know. Tampa? You know, Tampa is such a black box. I don't really know a lot about their thinking and what they think about this stuff moving forward. I truly don't believe that Bowles is going to be there, but I do think that Jason Light will probably keep that job. So how do they see Justin Fields? How do they see their roster? So a team like that, a team like Minnesota, a team like Atlanta, but I would honestly be surprised if Atlanta was interested. I kind of would be surprised if Minnesota would be interested. So I don't know how many seats there actually are for teams that would be very aggressive in trying to make a move to go get him.
The team I will throw out there, and this is just speculation. I don't know anything inside. I don't think I know anything inside, but I have an idea of Justin Fields possibly being an undervalued asset. And that to me screams Washington Commanders. And
yeah, Washington would potentially be it too. But I also think there's an argument for them keeping Howell.
You don't have to get rid of Sam Howell. And Fields is not that expensive. I mean, I think if you're rebuilding, you have that runway to say, hey, Justin Fields beat out Sam Howell for this job. And, you know, I don't think the worst thing in the world is having Sam Howell as a pretty valuable, you know, low cost backup with the upside to fill in if Fields is hurt, if Fields struggles. Like, that competition is not the worst thing in the world to me. Justin Fields has not earned, like, number one, locked in stone, you will not have anybody competing for your job status based on how he's played so far as a pro.
And you don't think Sam Howell has either?
Depends on who you ask. If you ask Ron Rivera, maybe, but I don't believe that is the case for Sam Howell. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better with the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country. There is no competition. And right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a Jets Pizza location near you. Again, try Jets Signature 8-Corner Pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jets Pizza. Better because it has to be. I'll move on. Next one up for I'll pick one here. I sort of alluded to it earlier. I think Brandon Staley with the Chargers, where maybe this is, it's too far gone, like Fields. Maybe it's just this is not going to happen. But do you think Brandon Staley has any chance of coming back next season without a significant run here at the end of 2023?
No. I don't think he has any chance of coming back with a significant
run. Really?
There's very few pathways for them to make the playoffs when you consider how stacked that AFC wildcard race is. They have to make the playoffs and win a playoff game for him to be back.
Dude, there's like six teams in the conference that have a starting quarterback, and they're one of them.
I think he's gone. That's why he wasn't on my list, because I think there are some coaches that the decision's probably already been mm-hmm. made. And the four that I would say outside of the guys who have already been fired – are Staley.
Mm-hmm.
I think Belichick will be gone. Wow. I think Rivera will be gone. And I think Todd Bowles will be gone.
Okay. Rivera is not exactly a shocker, but Belichick, you feel confident about, and you feel confident about Brandon Staley.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I feel more confident about Staley than I do about Belichick. Oh, sure. But again, I would be surprised if either one of them were the head coach of their current team next season.
Okay. So let me play devil's advocate here. Let's say Staley, they finish up Broncos at Raiders, Bills at Broncos, Chiefs in week 18, who probably will have something to play for, but let's say they don't. It's not out of the question. Stranger things have happened than the Chargers winning their next four games and getting to 9-7 before a Chiefs game in week 18. Nine games probably get you in. I don't think you're going to be higher than the 7th seed. You're probably playing... who's going to be the two in the AFC? It's total chaos. You're probably playing the Ravens or the Dolphins, which, I mean, you can only imagine Ravens Chargers with Brandon Staley's job on the line versus Lamar Jackson's playoff history. You can only imagine how that will go. But if they finish with 9 wins, they make it to the postseason. You think that would still end with Brandon Staley missing out and getting replaced by somebody else?
I do. I think they have to win a playoff game. I think that was the charge before the season began, and I don't think the way this has gone has given them any more leeway or any more earned equity in this entire process.
No question.
So I would be very, very surprised, and I just don't think that run is possible. I think the Bills are a much better football team than the Chargers, despite the records.
Oh, sure. I agree with you. But, again, stranger things have happened than the Chargers winning first. So the Raiders, you know, win 4 straight under Rich Bisacci a couple of years ago and make it to the postseason. Like, to me, it's not about are the Chargers the better team, because they're not, but can they get hot? Can they beat the Broncos twice? I think they can beat the Broncos twice. I don't think the Broncos, as much as I was on them before the season, as much as I feel vindicated by their recent run of success, it's not like the Broncos are a great football team. Like, none of these teams
are
great.
How do you feel vindicated by this, Mr. Fumble Luck? You feel good about how they've done this?
Listen, how many times have I said something was going to happen and then had bad luck, fumble luck, all this nonsense, have it like the best red zone performance in history from the Packers a couple years ago not go my way? Let me reap the benefits of variance one time, Robert Mays. I also have the Steelers on my list of teams to decline. And trust me, that is a sweat each and every week, seeing how they're going to contort themselves into winning a game that they don't deserve to win. I'm shocked they did not win that Cardinals game. I'm like, as that game was going on, I'm like, okay, they got a break for an hour and a half. They're going to come up with some new look that Kyler Murray's not expecting. The GTA 6 trailer is going to release a few days early. Kyler's going to see it during the break and be distracted for the second half. Like, that team is infuriating to me. But
all-time opposite vibes game, where the Cardinals are a terrible football team but have nothing but good vibes coming off of them right now, and the Steelers continue to keep winning and there's nothing but bad vibes. I guess the one game post-Matt Canada gave everybody a little bit of hope that things were going to be different, and then they come out and look like that against Arizona.
They look like garbage. Kenny Pickett gets hurt. You're in, like, terrible rain in Pittsburgh. The game gets delayed twice. Like, it's just not fun to be a Steelers fan. Good things don't happen to you on the offensive side of the ball. I'm not saying you're wrong about any of the Staley things you're saying. I don't disagree with you. And the big concern here is, like, you can't be a defensive coach, which we alluded to earlier. If you're going to be a defensive coach, your defense has to be good. That's the one thing you cannot get away with, is having a bad defense. Maybe if you're, you know, if the offense is top three, but this is not a top three offense. This is an inconsistent offense. Do you think they also consider moving on from Tom Telesco? Like, do you think this is a wholesale, we're changing everything based on what's happened here?
I think it should be.
It should be.
The roster is not nearly as good as people make it out to be. It's not nearly as good. So how many times when we're watching a Chargers game or I'm watching TV, just offhandedly people will say, man, this team has a lot of talent. This team has some talent.
Mm-hmm.
That, for the most part, if you look at the underlying build of the roster, I think that there's a lot to be desired. And I think that there are a lot of missteps that this team has made in their personnel decisions, in the draft, etc. And we kind of gloss over it because they have four or five stars at the top, mm-hmm. and that blinds us to what the roster actually looks like. We should talk more about the Kenneth Murray situation.
Mm-hmm.
Them trading up for Kenneth Murray and the way that Kenneth Murray has played, finding Justin Herbert just doesn't wash all of that stuff away. Mm-hmm. Finding Justin Herbert and having Justin Herbert doesn't make the J.C. Jackson signing any less terrible. There have just been so many mistakes that they have made over the last couple of years. And I know Khalil Mack has played great this year, but he was underwhelming last year, mm-hmm. and they gave up a second round pick to go get him. I just think that there have been a lot of mistakes in the way they've built that team and the vision that they've had. I talk to a lot of teams, a lot of coaches in August every year. It's one of my favorite things to do, is just during training camp, sit down with people that are decision makers and trying to shape the organization, just asking, what's your plan for why this is going to be different? What did you do this offseason to take you where you want to go? Mm-hmm. And I don't think any team has been more off from the plan they wanted to follow heading into this season than the Chargers. They wanted to be better running the ball. They wanted to be better defensively. All of those things that were supposed to improve didn't improve. So if there's not progress in these areas where they're spending so much time and focus, what are we doing here? Mm-hmm. And I think that also extends to the front office. So maybe this is just my love for Justin Herbert and thinking he's a really good player kind of blinding me here. I want to see them in better circumstances moving forward, and I just think new leadership is potentially the way to do that.
Yeah, I mean, Kenneth Murray, J.C. Jackson, and then Quentin Johnston this year, three significant moves. You're two prominent first-round picks. They did get Rashawn Slater in between, who's awesome, but two prominent first-round picks, and then your biggest free agent signing. All, I mean, we'll see with Quentin Johnston, but early returns are not great.
The fact that Zay Flowers is playing the way that Zay Flowers is, and he played like that against the Ravens, that, or against the Chargers, that feels like an adjacent situation to the A.J. Brown game against the Titans a couple years ago. Well, when you're watching that happen in real time, I don't know how you're the Spanos is and sitting there thinking, this is okay.
Dude, I've never had this experience before with an NFL player, an NFL receiver. I honestly don't want him to get the football because I'm nervous he's going to drop it. Like, I feel so bad
for him.
I feel genuinely bad.
He's literally just a mess right now.
And like, I can't recall that happening before. I've seen other players deal with drops, like, but I never felt that way about Nelson Aguilar. I never felt that way about, you know, like a running back who had fumble issues. Like, I genuinely want him to go through the entire game and never see the football because I'm afraid he's going to mess up. And that is very sad for your first round pick at wide receiver.
Yeah, and especially when these guys are having so much success deeper in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the guy drafted right behind him, but even guys like Tank Dell, and I understand we shouldn't play this game. We shouldn't play the Tank Dell was a good third-round pick. That's what makes this worse. When the guys directly after him are playing much better than him and are clearly better fits in NFL offenses, and Jordan Addison and Zay Flowers, that's where I think it's a little bit easier to make that jump.
We can play this game if people play the we have to trade for a wide receiver with our second round pick because there's no good wide receivers in this year's draft, and Tank Dell and Puka Nacua come off the board. I didn't want to bring it up. I didn't want to bring it up, but you just set me up for it. I'm just saying, you can't know, okay, like this guy who has a third round grade, just 5'10", is going to be a superstar. You can't know Puka Nacua is going to be a superstar, but there's just a lot more uncertainty than we know about. And that sort of brings you back to the Kenneth Murray trade, where they made a deal where they felt extremely confident that this player who had fallen to the bottom of the first round at a position we do not prioritize in the modern NFL was going to be a star. And he has not just simply not been a star. He has been straight up unplayable for stretches of his rookie contract. He's been a mess season after season for them. And that's a, if you trade up for a middle linebacker in the first round and he's an okay starter, that's a whiff, but you can tolerate it. To trade up for a player like that and get a guy who is probably going to sign next year for like $1 billion somewhere, like it's going to be a reclamation project somewhere, is absolutely brutal.
Do you know what pick they gave up to move up to pick Kenneth Murray?
They gave up a second rounder.
Well, they traded their 37th pick and the 71st pick to move up to 23 in that draft. Do you know who was taken with the 71st pick in the 2020 draft?
Oh, gosh. Can you give me a division of the team that made the trade with them?
The AFC North.
AFC North.
Well, there were multiple trades, so this is hard to do because there's no reason to dig into the. It's Justin Madubuike
on my list.
Yeah,
on my list, Justin Madubuike. This is like every week I watch the Ravens, and every week I'm like, "Holy, who is this dude wrecking stuff up front?" And it's always Justin Madubuike. He is one of the best defensive players in football this year.
He's been awesome.
He's been incredible.
He's a really good example where I think that this, we're all guilty of this, and this is a tangent, but we're all guilty of this. Player development is so real.
Yes.
Player development is so real. This guy who was a lot of promising flashes. I mean, he's been a athletic football show all-star for like 2 years now. And we've talked a lot about, and man, Justin Madubuike really shows some stuff. I mean, he think he has a really good chance to be a good player, but he's really developed into that dude this year. And we've seen that all over the place. Like, Quiddy Pay is playing well for the Colts. I mean, there's just so many examples this year of guys
Raymond their own. For the Colts.
Bernard Raymond. I mean, Will Fries has played great for the Colts, and the Colts have a lot of examples of this. I think their patience has paid off. But just, we don't have to make decisions on guys after year one or two. Like, everyone calm down. Everyone to pump the brakes a little bit. It takes a while for some of these guys to really come into their own. And I think Justin Madubuike is probably the best example of that around the league this year.
Yeah, I think he is on my list because there's the question of, does he get a franchise tag or does he get like a enormous interior pass rusher deal? Like, does he get basically something close to what Chris Jones gets in free agency?
I think that would be a mistake.
Really? He's got to be, what, 4 years younger, 3 years younger than Chris Jones?
I would be worried about giving him that 3 years contract, even if I think Justin Madubuike is a very good player, because I think that scheme in Baltimore is phenomenal.
You know what?
I think the pass rush production that they have created as part of that defense.
Sure.
Smoke and mirrors isn't the right way to frame it, but if you look at the gap between their pressure rates and their sack rate,
sure.
Typically that would be an indication that a defense is going to come back to earth.
Sure.
I think for them specifically, it's a little bit easier explained by how pointed and I mean, it's almost like a heat-seeking missile, like when they decide when they're going to blitz and how to use some of those simulated pressures. Yep. So I think Justin Madubuike is a very good player. If I were a team in free agency, I would be looking at that with a microscope in terms of figuring out where a lot of his production is coming from and whether or not as the centerpiece of a team's pass rush, which if you're giving a guy to Chris Jones contract, he has to be, if he can ultimately be that for you.
So two things. Number one, very different kind of player, very different scheme, of course, but I remember the Za'Darius Smith deal with the Packers that I hated because I'm like, well, you know, the Ravens are so good at dialing up blitzes. He's getting, you know, getting great opportunities to pressure. He hasn't had that, you know, a consistent 4-year career as a great player. And then he was great for the Packers. And I was totally wrong about that deal. Obviously very different player.
Judon is the same deal. I mean, they've had a lot of guys that were pass rushers that have been productive in other places. So it's something to keep in mind. I just think that this team specifically and this defense specifically, it would give me pause because of how good of a job I think Mike McDonald is doing.
But that's the thing. There is a decent chance that Mike McDonald might be signing Justin Madubuike for his new team because he's the head coach somewhere this upcoming season.
I'll be fascinated to see if he goes somewhere or if he doesn't.
What? I if you're going to hire any defensive coach, I feel like that is the easiest hire.
Not because I don't think teams will be interested, because I don't think he's going to jump at any job that comes open.
Well, we talked about some jobs that might come open here. Like, do you think if the Patriots call up Mike McDonald and say, hey, you can be, you know, we want to give you 6 years to rebuild post Bill Belichick?
So this is a fascinating question. Do you think the Patriots head coaching job is a good job?
It's good, but not for the reasons we typically think of when we think about what a good job is. Because good job typically means quarterback. It means desirable location.
Well, they're going to have a quarterback. There's a chance they have one of the top two picks in the draft.
Sure, of course. But like, it's not. They might have the third pick. It might be in a messy situation relative to the top two selections. You know, I think what makes that job desirable is you have an owner and you have a franchise that has been extremely patient with coaches and has made, frankly, very good choices. They've hired two coaches and they're 2 for 2 in terms of their selections. So my guess is McDonald would have a good amount of time to work with if he went there, which I think is a positive when you look at, say, not that he's going to go there, but the Panthers, for example.
I also think what they do with their general manager position and what they do with their front office period is something that's worth watching.
No question.
Because they have a very specific way that they handle personnel in New England. And I think that method and that process has run out of gas. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the biggest problems that they're facing there. So them just deciding to promote Lieutenant X to be their general manager and continuing to roll with the model that they currently have in place, I would be a little bit hesitant about that if I were one of these head coaching candidates.
No question. And I think that's part of the conversation you have is, do I get to bring a personnel guy with me? Like, does that change the situation?
Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch.
Exactly. Well, not necessarily, doesn't have to be a guy who's on TV. Like, he doesn't have to hire Greg Olson to be his GM. But, you know, did they bring somebody from the Ravens? There's a million lieutenants in the Ravens who have been there forever who, I mean, have been under some pretty good GMs who could, I think, would love the opportunity to be a personnel guy somewhere. Who do you have next?
So I have a lot of those coaches, and the way that I bucketed it, and that's why I didn't have them specifically as like my bullet points. Mm-hmm. Staley, Belichick, Rivera, Bowles, we talked about. I also think that Dennis Allen is probably going to get fired this offseason.
I think Saints fans want to fire him.
Yeah, I would be surprised. And if they win the division, maybe that changes. But it's hard to watch that team. We talked about this on our Sunday show. Mm-hmm. It's hard to watch that team and not come away cold right now. I mean, they just leave me so underwhelmed. It's unbelievable. A group that I think is a little bit murkier in what their futures look like are Robert Saleh and Joe Douglas.
Yeah.
It feels like such a mess there. And in so many other circumstances, those guys would just get fired.
Yeah.
They would just get fired. This would just be over. We'd have a clean start. Everything that happened this year would be like, oh, man, remember how crazy that was? Everything that's happened this week with Zach Wilson, which I'm going to talk about with Diana Rossini a little bit later today. But this is so unique because of everything that's happening with Rodgers. Mm-hmm. So you have that free pass potentially with ownership where you can just say, well, Rodgers was hurt. What were we supposed to do? So that's part of it. And the other part of it is, how much influence does Rodgers have in deciding whether they're going to keep these guys?
He has a ton of influence, you have to imagine. He built this year's roster.
So weird. So in every other circumstance, these guys would just be gone. They would start over. Mm-hmm. But everything about the Rodgers factor in this leads me to believe that they might not have the most at stake, even if this gets really ugly over the next 5 weeks, because of who's sitting back there pulling the strings.
Okay, so what if Rodgers goes to ownership and says, listen, we got to make changes. Robert Saleh, good guy. He's got to go. Nathaniel Hackett, head coach of the New York Jets.
I knew you were going to say that.
It's kinda, I knew you were going to say that. Like, what do you do?
If you're Rodgers at this point, though, wouldn't you just see what you can get away with?
Of course.
Why wouldn't you just see how far you could take all of this? And that would just be the ultimate, I own this team move. That would be the ultimate, like, you are going to do what I say. We are hiring Nathaniel Hackett. But if he did that, what are they supposed to do? Say no?
I have no idea. I mean, they've already, like, honestly, if you could make Nathaniel Hackett head coach and he was not running the offense and they just gave offensive control to somebody else, that might be better in the scheme of things, perhaps. But just a strange situation.
I don't know, man.
Do you think Saleh's, you know, clear ability to develop defensive players, which the defense is really good, do you think If Rodgers does not pick up his phone for 3 weeks and the Jets have to make this decision on his own, on their own, do you think Saleh's ability to coach up the defense saves him at all?
That would be where it was rooted. If he ends up keeping the job, the argument would be and the rationalization would be, the defense is so good. As soon as we get Rodgers, let's see what we can be. And I understand coming down on that side of it. I just think it's gotten so ugly and so messy right now that it's hard to see that light at the end of the tunnel.
Right. And I think the tough part is, you know, we publicly criticize Robert Saleh for some of the comments he makes about Zach Wilson, especially earlier in the year when he was just blindly defending Zach Wilson. And there's more than one factor there. Like, yes, there is an element of, like, don't you see how bad this guy is playing? But also, we don't know how ownership feels. There might very well be a mandate from ownership saying, like, we're not giving up on Zach because we used a second overall pick on him. Like, we're installing him as the number two. Like, he needs to play. Like, as much as we think coaches have ownership over those decisions and over those processes, like, you saw with the Giants. I mean, when they benched Eli for Geno Smith a few years ago, like, that decision was changed very quickly because of the ownership being upset about the reaction to Eli losing that consecutive game streak. And ownership,
you're going back that far? How about this offseason when Daniel Jones got that extension?
Listen, you don't want to talk about the Chase Claypool thing. I don't want to talk about the Daniel Jones extension. I think there's a realistic element of, like, ownership saying, hey, like, you know, yes, this team has been bad. Yes, we made the wrong choices, but we own those choices. It's easy to fire Saleh and have it be we're going to replace him with someone new. But I also think that Saleh might be getting credit for having to be, you know, the front man for some terrible decisions the Jets made this offseason that might have been a product of ownership sort of giving Rodgers a blank check to do whatever he wanted.
Not making any sort of move at quarterback over the first 12 weeks of the
incredible
season.
Incredible.
It's really bad. It's really bad. And by all accounts, in talking to Diana and in talking to people who've reported about this situation, they didn't make calls on a Jacoby Brissett. They didn't try to make calls on Josh Dobbs. They had no urgency to add to that quarterback room at any moment. And that's rough. I don't know who is ultimately responsible for that, but that to me is almost a fireable offense.
Dude, did you see?
For you to just lose the season with the defense that you have.
Yes.
You know how hard it is to lose in the NFL? You know how hard it is to lose every single week and just be terrible on one side of the ball? You know what demoralizing that is for guys in the locker room? That wears on people.
Yes.
That wears on Sauce Gardner, on Quincy Williams, on Quinnen Williams, the guys that you've built. So to lose an entire year, even if Josh Dobbs wasn't going to take you to a Super Bowl.
No.
That's rough.
Dude, to lose 2 years to Zach Wilson with the great defense. Because it was the same thing last year.
I understand rolling with him last year. But last year, you almost have
to. No, I don't understand. You had better options than him last year behind him. You don't have those options this year at this point.
Joe Flacco doing what he did this Sunday.
Dude, Joe Flacco. I mean, he did throw a classic Joe Flacco arm punt to break that game open late, but man, for three quarters, I was like...
Is that worse than what the Jets have been getting?
No.
It was on my multi-view, so I couldn't rewind it and take a screenshot on YouTube, but there was a shot of all four of the quarterbacks sitting on the bench, Rodgers, Wilson, Boyle and Trevor Siemian all looking down at their Microsoft Surface tablets. I'm like, this is one of the saddest images of the NFL season. This is brutal.
Yeah. I mean, with Saleh...
Where are you at on Joe Douglas?
Come on. I mean, I've had people with Joe Douglas avatars telling me how bald I am for 6 months. And I'm like, you guys... I recognize that you're not actually Joe Douglas, but like you do see who's in your avatar on Twitter, right? Like not criticizing Joe Douglas, nothing wrong with being bald. I recognize that I am also bald, but like that's not really an insult if the guy you are fanboying for is also bald. Joe Douglas is like he has positives and negatives. Like he's made some incredible choices and he's made some absolutely horrific decisions running this football team. And
outside of the Rodgers thing, if Rodgers' influence has no bearing here and you just get to make this decision in a vacuum, would either of them be back?
I would bring them back. And the only reason why is that they have one more year. Like next year is the natural break. Like you brought up the Fields thing. Like to me, this is the natural break of, okay, we are all in with this roster to win with Rodgers next year. Like we have paid attention to our strengths and weaknesses better than anybody else. Like, yes, changes have to be made. Yes, they have to be smarter about how they approach things, but like they at least are already there. And I think if you bring in a new coach, a new GM, you're starting over in what's basically an all-in year for your organization, that doesn't make sense to me. I don't think that aligns with where you are in terms of your roster. And
yeah, I agree with you.
If you have a great candidate, maybe like if you can get I'm trying to think of who a good candidate would be. Like, if you could hire Bill Belichick to be your head coach, and he's just going to take care of the defense and Aaron Rodgers is going to run the offense, maybe that works. I don't know. But I would give Robert Saleh one more year. I'd give Joe Douglas one more year. And I think unless the Jets are a Super Bowl team the following year, then I think it's natural to move on from Rodgers and then probably to move on from Saleh and Douglas as well.
Yeah, I always felt that was the most natural way to do this, is just to say, hey, listen, this is a mulligan year. It's unfortunate what happened. We should get one shot at this with the team that we constructed, even if it has gotten ugly and even if I think you're talking yourself into something with that. That always felt like the most reasonable, likely outcome, and I do think that's still probably what's going to happen.
Do you think they approach next offseason any differently, though?
I think they have to. I mean, I think you have to be more urgent about adding playmakers. I think you have to be more urgent about not letting Rodgers shape every decision that you're going to make, because it's gotten them in a lot of trouble.
So you don't think they're trading for Devontae Adams this offseason?
That's fine. That's a reasonable way for Rodgers to shape it. I think that sort of urgency aligns with what we're talking about, making sure you can get everything you can out of next year. I think it puts you in a precarious spot in 2025 and moving forward a little bit if you don't hit on the plan that you have in 2024. But I wouldn't be surprised or disappointed at all if they ended up making that move, because at this point you're committed. You might as well see this thing through.
Devontae Adams, David Bakhtiari, maybe Corey Linsley, and Corey Linsley is still under contract. Who else the Pack or the Jets bring in to supplement Aaron Rodgers next year?
I mean, might as well just bring Josh Sitton in to bolster the interior offensive line depth. Might as well just keep going. TJ Lang's available.
He's busy tweeting. I don't know if TJ Lang is actually available. You got a couple more. Give me another person or another maybe a group of people from your list.
I have Kyler Murray.
Yeah, me too.
I think that Kyler Murray and what he looks like over the next 5 weeks and what his future is going to be in Arizona is one of the more intriguing stories about the league to me, because I think it shapes what could happen in the top three of the draft, and it shapes the future of that organization and potentially another that might have been trading for Kyler Murray if Arizona was going to move on from him.
Absolutely.
So I'm fascinated about how that's ultimately going to play out. Obviously, he's already been paid, so there's only so much at stake, but his role, his job, where that's going to be, I absolutely think all of that is on the line here over the next 5 weeks.
And what's so fascinating about this one is it kind of feels like it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like if Kyler Murray plays well, the Cardinals, they're not going to win every single week, but they're going to be competitive. They're going to win a couple more games than we expect, and they're going to play their way out of one of the top two seeds in the strap, which they have already since Kyler Murray's come back. But if Kyler struggles and his numbers, I mean, I think he's been better than his numbers, but his numbers are not great. He's completing under 61% of his passes, averaging 6.6 yards per attempt. Like, he's been basically Joshua Dobbs since returning, and he makes a lot more money than Joshua Dobbs. If he struggles and the Cardinals do end up with one of the first two picks, like, that's the most likely scenario. So, it kind of feels like, unlike some of these other situations, like with Justin Fields, for example, where it kind of feels like, okay, it's out of his hands at this point, it does feel directly dependent on what Kyler Murray does over the next five games.
Agreed. And I think that what happens behind the
scenes games,
is as important or close to as important as what happens on the field. And I think what has gone on in that building and what they've gotten out of him and what those relationships have looked like, even dating back to this offseason, have been promising enough to give him a real shot to hang on to this thing moving forward. So as they continue to struggle, as things continue to be a little bit frustrating, does that dynamic stay the same as it has so far? I think that's also something that's worth thinking about, even if we're not going to know the answer.
Do you think there's any scenario where they get one of the first two picks and they trade it and just build around Kyler and three, four first round picks that they get from that trade?
I do think that.
Really?
I think if he plays well enough and if they feel good enough about him moving forward, I actually do think that is a possibility. I really do. I think they could come to the end of the season and say, are we going to get a better quarterback than Kyler Murray out of this process?
But it's not
that. We know what he is. I know it's not that as the way we look at it.
Sure.
But I think they might look at it that way. Where are we going to get a better player than this out of this process? And if we just decide to build around him, is that our best path moving forward? I wouldn't be shocked if that's where they landed, but I think that they're going to turn over every stone in thinking about it.
Sure.
I've been impressed so far with the process-oriented approach that Monty Austin Ford has taken. I think that they've done a really intentional, thoughtful job about, all right, what kind of organization are we going to be? How are we going to build our football team? What sorts of guys are we looking for? Why are we looking for those sorts of guys? And I think that that is going to extend to this. And I can understand that mindset and that scope taking them to a place where they say, Kyler Murray plus a bunch more draft picks is what is best for us right now.
And that's I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm just saying that that would be surprising. But I think it is much more so than Justin Fields a legitimate question for the Cardinals as they approach the final four games of this year. Which, by the way, they play the Niners. They're at the Bears. They at the Eagles and finish up with the Seahawks. Decent chance they're losing those final four games.
Yeah, they won the one game I needed them to. All I wanted for that was them to win one more game over the rest of the year and give a little bit of breathing room for that Carolina pick. That's all I needed.
I don't think you need to worry too much about that Carolina pick. I don't.
I'm going to sweat it out until the end. Come on. I have a question for you. I wanted to mention his name on this show, but I feel like this already might be sewn up. He was at the top of your list in the preseason.
Yep.
Do you think Tua has just earned the contract?
I mean, to me, it's about health more than play, right? Like, I think the only thing that would stop them at this point, maybe I'm wrong. I believe the only thing that would stop them is Tua not getting injured. And I mean, it's sort of fallen into like a weird sort of space between the concerns we had for him after his first 2 years and the guy we saw last year, where the guy we saw in 2022 was like, oh my God, Tua can be the MVP if he plays this way over a whole season. And it's not that his numbers are bad, because his numbers are really good. But I think we're not talking about him like he's a top five quarterback. And maybe he is. Maybe I'm not trying to have that debate. But I do think it feels like, you know, he's sort of fallen into a space where we all think he's good. We all think he is helping this team. But maybe he's at that Jared Goff, Carson Wentz level, as opposed to the, like the Herbert Allen, I'm a transcendent player level, and there's nothing wrong with that. You can win with that guy, but we saw those contracts not work out. I don't know if the Dolphins are thinking this way. I do think if Tua stays healthy and plays the way he has this year, he's going to get paid, but it does sort of feel like we're having a different sort of conversation about him than the one maybe I was expecting heading into the season.
It's not necessarily that different than what I thought, because mm-hmm. even if he stayed healthy, it was always going to be a question of how much do you pay a quarterback that isn't the driver of your offensive success. Mm-hmm. I think he has been good. I think he does everything that they ask of him. But I think if you're being honest with yourself, he is not the most important piece in why that team is great. So what do you pay a quarterback like that, who is clearly vital to your success, but isn't one of the best 5, 6, 7 quarterbacks in the league? And if you go back to 2020, when those Carson Wentz and Jared Goff contracts were handed out, mm-hmm. those guys became the highest paid players in the league. That they were just the next guys in line. That was the next contract to be handed out.
There's no discount happening here.
And so that's my question is, does he just get paid like Justin Herbert and Joe Burrow?
I'm not going to say the Bears, because I think you'll have a visceral reaction if I ask this. If the Patriots get the second overall pick, and the Dolphins say, hey, New England, we'll give you Tua for the second overall pick. The Patriots probably say no, but do they hang up and they're like, how dare you? I don't know.
I think they hang up very quickly.
Hang up. Straight up hang up. No question. I mean, I'm not saying you're wrong. I just, for a guy who is completing 70% of his passes, averaging nearly 9 yards per attempt, probably going to be one of the 5 best quarterbacks in football this year, at least by the numbers, that does seem kind of shocking. Again, not saying you're wrong, just it's kind of crazy that we're at that point.
That's why these situations in particular are fascinating. What happens with him and the contract that he gets and what that means to the Dolphins moving forward, and we're a couple years away from this happening, but it's going to be a very similar discussion about what's happening with Brock Purdy. I don't need to open that Pandora's box right now, but that is going to come over the next 36 months.
How many people who you've had on your podcast or been on their podcast are going to write the Brock Purdy contract article this offseason? Because I could think of like 5 people off the top of my head, who, including me, who are going to have to write about that.
I mean, you're going to have to. It's going to have to be a discussion. Thankfully for you, at least it's 2 years away. I guess 1 year. He's going to have one more season, and then we're going to have to figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the thing for me is, like with Tua, he's on my list, but I really think it's just injury. I do not believe the Dolphins are going to get through this year if Tua plays this way for the rest of the season. No matter what happens in the playoffs, if they win a playoff game or not, I don't believe they are going to say we're good. I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, I agree. But that was my question, is do we think it's already sewn up outside of injury? And I think the answer to that might be yes.
Yes. A player who I don't think it's sewn up for, and I think could go in so many different directions over the rest of the year, is a guy who got traded at the deadline, and it's Chase Young, where I can't think of a player, maybe you can think of one, where the combination of upside, of injury risk, of path to free agency, of college success and pedigree, of having a great fit on a winning team. Like, there's just so many factors that go into Chase Young's next few games, and most likely, of course, with the Niners postseason, where there's a scenario where he's kind of anonymous and he re-signs with them for like $3 million for a year, or goes somewhere else for like Arden Key money. And I think there's a scenario where he has like 5 sacks during a Super Bowl run, and the Niners, he signs like a $20 million a year contract somewhere.
Absolutely. He's on my list because I think that all of those things are in play. The Bears made the move they did for Montez Sweat, whatever you think of that move, because that position is dry in free agency. There's just so few opportunities to find game-changing players at that position in free agency because they never get there. They never get there. And I think Chase Young might be one of those exceptions where he's super, super talented and he's going to potentially get there because Washington was in a period of transition. He has his injury history and the Niners probably can't afford to pay him. So there is a chance we get to the end of the season. He's one of the most impactful pass rushers in the league on a per snap basis, like top 10 sort of numbers. And teams look around and say, I understand all of the risks, but you just don't have chances in the market to find players like this.
He's also going to be 24 years old when the free agent market opens, which you don't find chances to find 24-year-old defensive starters in free agency, let alone guys with Chase Young's upside. So that's such a fascinating one to me because it could go in so many different directions. Like with someone like Tua, for example, like, yes, he could get hurt, but like the realistic scenario is he either plays his fifth-year franchise tag or he gets a contract. And for someone like Madubuike, like same thing, franchise tag or long-term deal. For Staley, head coaching job or he's a coordinator somewhere. Like Chase Young, there's so many different possibilities.
I agree. And I think that free agent pass rusher market period is going to be interesting to watch because most of them probably won't get there, but there are more of them set to hit free agency on December 5th than I can remember in recent memory. Chase Young, Brian Burns, Josh Allen, Danielle Hunter. I mean, there are a lot of guys that teams are going to have to make that decision about. Do we franchise tag them? Do we give them a long-term deal? Or are we going to let them ultimately hit the market? And I think there will be fewer than we want, as always happens in free agency, but it's just a different looking group than we're used to.
Yeah. I mean, Danielle Hunter is the one where his contract, they cannot franchise him. So he has the ability to either get out there or sign a long-term deal. The Vikings have not seemingly been able to come to terms with him on a long-term deal. He's having a great year. So, and he's a little older than, you know, your Chase Youngs of the world, but that's an opportunity for if a team wants to go out and sign that one dude, like you're going to see him in the market most likely. So that's going to be a really fascinating one as well. Do you want to give me,
I wonder if the Vikings are thinking about this a little bit differently now that it feels like the Cousins reunion is on the table.
Yeah.
Because if it wasn't and they knew that they were going to go with a stopgap quarterback and then a cheap option either next year or this year or next year in the draft, I think it becomes a little bit easier to pre-spend and use the leeway afforded to you by that rookie quarterback contract. But if you're going to have to pay Kirk Cousins, let's call it $40 million a year. Let's say he gets the Derek Carr contract this time around, which I think he deserves. If Derek Carr got that contract, Kirk Cousins is certainly worth it, even coming off a major injury.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's one difference I can think of between those two guys.
I still feel like there would be a market for Kirk Cousins this offseason. So I think that they will, that market will be hungry enough that they won't be able to get him at a steep, steep discount? And do they feel that's their best pathway forward? And if it is, does it stop them from giving out the sorts of contracts they might have if they knew they were moving on to a rookie quarterback guy sooner rather than later?
So you don't think Joshua Dobbs is going to be their quarterback of the future?
I don't. I think it's a great story. I think that he has earned his role as a long-term backup in the NFL, which will include a life-changing amount of money that will change his existence and future generations for his family, and that's very awesome. But I do not think he'll be a long-term starter in the league, no.
Okay. Do you want to give me one more to wrap up here?
I've got a bunch more. Jared Goff I had, because I think that he's probably playing for his future in Detroit. Do they give him a big contract?
Do you really think that he runs the risk of not being there next year or in the next couple of years?
No, not that he runs the risk of not being there next year, but if he plays really well and they have success in the playoffs, does he get a sizable next deal? Like a long-term, we are committing to you, you are the guy of the future, here's $45 million a year sort of contract.
I think he gets that either way.
You think he gets that either way? Interesting. Yes. Okay. Okay, I don't think you're wrong about that, because I do think they love him. How about this? I had these all grouped together.
Okay.
The not-so-obvious offensive head coach candidates for next offseason.
Oh.
Right? We know Ben Johnson's going to get a job. But I think some of these other guys, it's a weird pool of candidates this year.
Mm-hmm.
There aren't that many offensive guys that are like, oh yeah, absolutely, he's going to be a head coaching candidate. Because a lot of the offensive coordinators that teams are going to be seeking out, we talked about the offensive first model earlier on the show.
Mm-hmm.
There aren't that many guys that are just no-brainers. It's a lot of guys that either aren't play callers for their teams, are super early in their career as play callers, or are kind of unconventional options. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about Bobby Slowick in his first year,
yep.
Brian Callahan, who's not a play caller, and obviously it's been a really weird season for the Bengals, Todd Monken,
mm-hmm.
you know, guys like that. What is that group of guys going to look like, and who distances themselves a little bit over the last month and maybe into the playoffs to give themselves an inside track at one of these jobs? It's a fascinating question to me, not just because I think my team is going to be in the market for one of them.
We talked about the Chargers. We didn't even talk about Kellen Moore, who, I mean, Kellen Moore could be the OC there again next year. He could be the head coach there next year. He could be a head coach somewhere else next year. He could be a positional coach somewhere next year. Like that's someone who has a lot of different scenarios based on what happens over the rest of 2023.
Yeah, I do not think he's going to be the head coach there. I would be surprised if he was a head coach in this cycle based on the way that the season has gone there. That would surprise me. But again, it's not like there are a lot of no-brainer options.
Right.
You know, Bobby Slowick is in his first season as a play caller. He's 36 years old. So many different cycles we would just say, he needs another year. He's not there yet. Now, with potentially 8 to 10 openings happening and not that many other guys that are just surefire candidates, guys like him are going to get interest here in a way that they wouldn't have in previous years, and it's going to be interesting to watch.
Oh, there's no to me, there's no question. If he goes into the offseason thinking, assuming nothing happens over the rest of the year, if he goes into the offseason thinking, I'm going to take the best head coaching opening that is offered to me, he's going to be a head coach. And like you said, that's because there are not many other offensive-minded options. And I mean, if you're Carolina, not that Bobby Slowick would necessarily want the Carolina job, but like, don't you see what they've done in Houston and just desperately throw money at him to go coach Bryce Young?
Potentially, yes. And I think that's, again, it would be surprising in other seasons, but it's just not surprising now because that's the state of things. I'm fascinated about which guys teams are going to want to talk to. Like, does Mike LaFleur get sniffed this for a head coach this offseason, despite what happened with the Jets because of how good the Rams have been? Like, we're going to have some guys that when all the interviews get announced and we think, oh yeah, this team is interested in this guy, I think there are going to be some surprising names that come up as part of that process.
Has to be. There have to be. And I think there's going to be an opportunity for guys who are not necessarily in great offenses at the moment, who have good resumes, but are not necessarily coaching the best football teams, getting opportunities for head coaching jobs. Someone who comes to mind for me, Mike McCarthy, where Mike McCarthy was a long time. Was he the quarterback's coach? He was the OC for the Saints.
For the Niners.
And then in 2005, he goes to the Niners. They're 4-12 that year. And
they had the worst offense in the league.
Alex Smith threw one touchdown against 11 picks in his first year. And Mike McCarthy got a head coaching job. And of course, you have to be a pretty good head coach. But like, there's the opportunity for something like that, where a guy who we're not seeing as a hot candidate because his team kind of stinks, but he might, like someone like Mike Kafka, for example, where like, I don't think Mike Kafka's had an awesome year, but Mike Kafka was a buzz candidate last year. You might have like a post-hype candidate get interviews and possibly even get an opportunity because there's just not many, you know, high-end, exciting, hot offensive coaches available.
The Eagles are going to be another interesting one. It's going to remind me of last year when all the Eagles fans wanted Jonathan Gannon fired and then he got a head coaching job. So many Eagles fans have been frustrated with what Brian Johnson has done. He's absolutely going to get head coaching interviews this offseason. And there are a couple others that I think, even if they're not play callers, like Frank Smith is going to get opportunities this offseason. He's the Dolphins offensive coordinator. So what that pool looks like and why it looks like that is going to be worth monitoring.
For sure. We could do this, I would say 6 hours. We could do this show and just go through 25 other people because people have popped up in my brain as we've been having this conversation. But we have to stop at some point. I'm going to stop it here. Maze, where can people check out your NFL coverage?
The Athletic Football Show, wherever you get your podcasts. We do it.
You do 18, 18 shows a week, if I'm not mistaken.
We have 6 shows a week. There are different flavors of shows, different hosts. I am on the feed 3 times a week. We also have a YouTube channel if you want to check that out, where we do some of our live streams after games. We have some YouTube-specific content. So the Athletic Football Show YouTube channel is a place where you can subscribe. But wherever you get your podcasts, Athletic Football Show, we would love it if you guys would give it a listen.
You know, it's always a blast having you on. I know I sighed because I know I'm going to have to get 25 more guests before I can have you on again. But, you know, I always appreciate it.
I'll do it whenever you want me to. Don't even worry about that.
Again, you have a lot of shows to do each week. You are a busy man.
It's fine.
All right. Thanks so much to my old pal, Robert Maze, longtime podcast partner, of course. Love doing shows with Maze. Hope you guys enjoyed us going through the league and some of these candidates for teams and players who have so much riding on the rest of the NFL season. We have more audio coming next week on the Bill Barnwell Show. Again, 2 shows through the rest of the regular season each week. A Tuesday show, Tuesday morning, recapping Wednesday Night Football and the breaking news from Monday. And then this Thursday morning show, more big picture looking at the NFL. Hope you guys enjoyed this week's show with Danny Kelly. Hope you enjoyed this show with Robert Maze. And more audio coming next week.